I think one of the things, you know, is a great deal of moral courage that's needed to do things differently and push the envelope, farm in a way that's in accordance with our values. And that comes at the disapproval and censure of a lot of our colleagues, mm-hmm. because they're at a place in their own journey where they don't understand what you're doing. They see change as something that threatens their well-being, yeah. as opposed to something that can enrich everyone's livelihoods.
We went solo. We went for over a year with no market for any of our animals. None. So that means no guaranteed income with a large, you know, building debt on our shoulders. But we believed in what we did, and we believed in each other, and we figured it out.
Welcome to the Heroic Minds Podcast, where we discover how to get out of our own way, unleash the full capability of our mind, become the hero of our story, and a hero for other people.
From an evolutionary perspective, we've evolved to manage threatening encounters.
I want to do everything in my ability to help them, but they make the call.
We have to do it in a way that doesn't just assume that going faster is going to be the cure-all.
When you suffer and then you come out of it on the other side, you stand a little taller, your voice doesn't shake anymore, your eyes are always up.
Sorry to depress you guys. Self-doubt is par for the course. It's just how you choose to deal with them, react to them or not react to them.
A little tough love goes a long way, and high expectation also goes a long way. But the more you expect of someone, the more they'll do.
I have to keep moving forward. No good comes from going back.
I don't need red tape. I'm not into rules. I'm not into regulation. I'm just going to do this.
Welcome back to the Heroic Minds Podcast. On today's episode, we have three generations of the Israel family. Carl, Jamie, and Brett. One day, the Israels decided they were going to convert their long-standing family farm to organic. But it came at a high cost. After converting to organic and taking on millions in debt, the market they were promised vanished. The family didn't put blame on anyone else. They dug their feet in. They decided to reinvent themselves. They changed the story of what they create and why they create it. They changed the story they were telling both internally and externally. This is a story of family, trust, creativity, and willpower. In this episode, we run through the family history. We talk about why the third generation, Brett, decided to leave the traditional education system to come back home and spearhead the family business. We talk about why getting off the farm isn't really a priority for the Israels. And you may not believe this one, but we're going to find out why they don't even really refer to themselves as farmers. To bring things home, we talk about the physically demanding aspects of their job and have an open conversation about what they think work ethic means. I want to put this out there and see if others notice throughout this conversation what I noticed and what's impacted me so much after having this conversation is that when you can develop, and I think you can, I don't think it's easy, but when you can develop a passion, a purpose, and meaning in your whatever you do every day, let's use your job for an example, because that's what we're talking about in this episode. When you can find that connection, and the connection you're going to hear today, not success in whatever way you look at it, but connection to what you're doing and feeling the impact and feeling the purpose of your job. I hypothesize that naturally you start to lose the need or perceived need or want or desire for things that you don't have. The things society and marketers are telling us you need to feel fulfilled, I think you naturally aren't really even looking, because you're focused on what's already giving it to you. All right, before I get too carried away and too passionate about this episode, I cannot forget to give a shout out to our friends at True Local before we jump into this episode. For those that have not tried True Local, high quality, locally sourced meat delivery, I suggest you give them a try. You go online, decide exactly what high quality meat you want, or frozen vegetables, or frozen fruits. They throw them in a box on dry ice. So if you're a day or two late, box is sitting out front of your condo or house, you'll be fine. Stuff will stay frozen. And then you pick up that box, throw all your goodies in the freezer, and then you decide when you want that box to arrive next. No hidden fees, no hidden costs, no set interval. You are in control. You decide when you want your True Local products to arrive. So again, that's True Local, TRULOCAL. And if you want to give them a try for the first time, use my discount code HEROICMINDS25, all capital letters, to get $25 off a regular size box and $10 off a personal size box. Alrighty, here we go.
Okay, you want me to start?
You go for it, Dad. You're the senior figure.
Okay. Well, I'm Carl. Carl is I'm the dad of Jamie, and Brett's my grandson. And so we started farming here in 1965. Actually, it was one of the farms that my father had purchased back in 1958. I myself was born and raised directly across the road from where we are here right now, which is where Jamie and Brett live now. So then in 65, we started here, and then we just grown from there. We bought various other farms, and then we gradually took over one of Dad's farms, and then when Dad passed away, we took on that farm also, and we've added some other farms since that, and we've predominantly been in the pig business. We were in cattle for a while, but we sort of had a situation where we had to spend a lot of money on our cattle barn, and we decided, well, maybe that was not going to be the best thing for us at the time, because it was right at the time of 22% interest, and so put a lot of brakes on things. So we've just grown from there, and so that's where we're at now. So that's sort of the foundation, and of course my wife Carolyn, she was heavily involved over the years, and gradually she's backed off. She's my bookkeeper now. So
My name is Jamie Israel. I'm the middle generation of 3Gen Organics. My wife Ann and I, we now live up at the farm right across the road from the home base, and I've been involved with the farm basically through childhood, through my junior playing days. I was employed off the farm for about 9 years, but through that, I always was involved with the farm. And you come to that crossroads where, you know, Dad always taught me that if you're going to do something for the rest of your life, make sure that you love what you do. And the jobs I was doing away from the farm didn't bring me the passion or the fulfillment that I was truly looking for. And I think what really brought it full circle, Ben, was when you have a son that has always had an interest in the farm and is going through his university years and has an idea or a vision or a goal, however you want to word it, of where the future of the farm could go. And you see the opportunity where three generations can work together and spend every day with family and do the things that you love to do. I looked at it as an opportunity for our family to, you know, this was something that made a lot of sense, and don't regret one minute of it. We're blessed. We're very fortunate. At the same time, there's three minds in the room at all times that have got very strong opinions. So, but I think what that does is it brings out the best in all of us. And it's a pleasure, and we're enjoying it.
Yeah, so the third generation in the mix, my name is Brett Israel. And it's a real treat and blessing, as Jamie mentioned, to be able to work together. I think what's really unique about our operation, and certainly something that we like to stress, is that, you know, we're building upon the legacy and the heritage that's been established to this point, and hopefully being able to provide a model for family farming to succeed and thrive in a more competitive, highly consolidated space that we are in the 21st century. You look at the sheer number of independent operations in Ontario, it's a fraction of what it was even 30 years ago. And in the life of Carl and the farming career of, you know, in his 79th year, I guess, yeah. Right now, a lot of years in farming and a lot of changes has taken place. So what's really cool is the opportunity to not discredit or turn away from the wisdom that generation had, but incorporate it and fuse it with a vision for what the future can be. And I think that's kind of the recipe for our success at this point. Or what success we have achieved is through accommodating the strengths of each generation. So deciding to return and learn from Carl's generation and being able to work with the two of them every day is a great enjoyment. And it provides that vocational aspect of work, that it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. And it's one that we enjoy every day.
For Brett, you know, I know a bit of your background and how academically inclined and successful you were in a time where life and everyone around you, maybe other than your family specifically, is saying, let's go the standard route, you know, the route that most people are taking and going down, getting the academic background, hopping into the corporate world. You decided to flip the script on that after, I think it was 1 year at a highly touted university, doing very well, and you were willing to take the risk to come back home and hop into the family trade. What? Why?
Yeah, well, you know, first off, Ben, have to correct you. It's 2 years, not one. So you shrunk my university experience in half there, buddy. I was at the Queen's School of Business for 2 years. And you're right, you know, going through high school, you certainly are presented with what are the reasonable pathways to achieve your goals. And I think there is a great deal of emphasis put on being able to be successful. And the traditional pathway would be to complete your, you know, post-secondary studies and enter the workforce in a role, whether it be in finance, consulting, certainly use your skill set to help other businesses. But that really never appealed to me. It was one of those experiences where you almost had to go far away from home to understand how important home was. And not just home from a sense of place, but also, you know, what you're doing. And a lot of my peers at Queen's come from families in Toronto, and they do, you know, quite well and following the family business, lawyers or doctors or consultants, but it just never fit. So I remember that evening, it was, I believe, later August, when I was supposed to return for my third year. And when I was at school, I'd come home pretty well every weekend, I should say that before. And a lot of Via Rail train passes were purchased over the years at Queen's. But I'd come home and work on the weekends and certainly in the summer, and having to face that idea of going back for a third year. And I was like, why am I doing this? I'm not happy. When I'm there, I want to be here. You know, when I'm there, I want to be here. And in the event of something happening health-wise with family, you'd be kicking yourself, you know, why didn't you spend more time learning and working and building together? So I went into, at that point, we were living in Waterloo still.
Yep.
Our family was. I remember going into my parents' bedroom, and, you know, around 8 or 9 at night, knocked on the door and just said, I can't go back tomorrow. I just can't have it happen. I'm not going back tomorrow. And I was on a chancellor scholarship. So it was my tuition fees were pretty heavily covered by that scholarship. And it was a decision that not many of my peers understood. And even took some convincing of some family members here. Grandpa understood right away. You took a bit of convincing because you didn't want me to get an opportunity. And I think grandma is still living with the, I told her that I can go back at any point in time. So in the event of something terrible happening here, Queens, I'll be returning to you. But I don't foresee that happening. So
it sounds like you made that decision through your instinct or your gut, as opposed to super calculated. Did you have a plan in place before you presented this to everyone?
Well, you know, I think that we collectively had an idea for where the operation could go. At that point in time, we had just begun the transition in principle to organic production. And a lot of it was, you know, why am I going to spend the next 2 years of my life focused on studies that you earn a degree? Fantastic. Well, when a problem comes up on the farm, whether it be in the fields or in the barn or whatnot, that degree isn't going to get you very far. You know, you have to be able to have experience and take the lessons you learn in an education setting like university and apply it in a practical setting. But you kind of get enough. I think 2 years of university was the perfect amount for me. You had enough in-class experience. And as opposed to spending a year abroad, which many students do in their upper years of university, spend it doing what you want to do. And so you had had an idea, but it was kind of that moment where all the reason in the world can support an argument, but you had to have passion for it. and the passion is what led to that decision.
It caught me off guard, and you wake up the next morning and you kind of think about it, and then you do a little bit of self-reflection. You know, I always joke around, high school has been the best 7 years of my life. So I'm not exactly one that should make comment on academic finishing it, because I went as far as grade 12, and that's as far as I was willing to go with my education, because I knew myself that I'd be just wasting time trying to go any further, because it wasn't my passion. I didn't have the attention span for it. So if he felt that passionate about this decision of, you know, taking a step away from university, let's dive right into the family farm and let's see where we can take this. Well, then you got to back that. You got to support it, because we all know you only get one kick at the can at this thing called life. And if you get this opportunity, the next day I quickly realized, this was a chance that not many families get to have, and let's go for it. So yeah, The initial was a little bit of shock, and I can go full throttle real quick. You know that. So it took me one night of sleep to probably rev my engines down a little bit and realize what the true benefit of his decision was.
As far as we knew, he was going back to university. And the next morning, Grandma and I were here having breakfast, and Brett walked in the door, and what the heck are you doing here? and so that's kind of when he sprung it on us. I think I took it maybe a little easier than Grandma did. I grade 8 was as far as I ever went. I still tell my kids I had to quit because I knew more than the teacher. So I still don't think they believe that. But anyways.
I think there was enough experience to get the foundational aspects of what the program was really, you know, focusing on. One of the quotes, and I'm going to paraphrase, that helped to steer me in that decision-making was, you know, most people of great measure have the primary hand in their own education. And I think that's a really powerful, you know, sentiment. You look at a lot of leaders in the world in terms of innovation and thought. And some, you know, choose a traditional path. Some choose a more destructive path. But regardless of that, you know, they are having the primary hand in their education. And that's served, you know, Carl very well. It certainly served Jamie well, too, I think. It's one of those aspects that's kind of marrying both worlds together.
Yeah. I think the one comment when I had to sit back and think about what Brett said, told me the night before, the comment that he made in his defense of how he was feeling, that I think really set in for me, was, why would I want to go back to school and sit in an entrepreneurship class when I can do it?
Learning it in a textbook, I think you're a good example for, let's learn the oral history, let's celebrate that, and let's combine that with some of the advancements in technology. That's the cool part. You know, you get an opportunity to have Carl, 79, you know, grade 8 education, and he's running highly integrated tractors with extremely impressive technology, information management systems that would have been, you know, way beyond anyone's concept even 20 years ago. So it's neat to see how we can push each other.
I know this is a complex conversation. You know, the Israels here are saying, well, we did it without the classic or traditional education route. And I'm not here to say whether that's right or wrong, but it is a complex conversation. And so one of the things we know from this podcast is sometimes storytelling can be sometimes a better way to convey meaning or ideas. And so I was doing some reading on Judaism, and specifically a story about different layers of meaning, different depths of meaning. And there's a mystical story that kind of touches on what we're talking about here today. And I wanted to share it because I was just reading about it, and I think it's really powerful. And so basically the story goes that these four really intelligent individuals take a journey through an orchard, and this orchard is mystical. So what the orchard actually represents is four dimensions of meaning. And the first one is quite simple. And then the fourth dimension could be overwhelming. It's very esoteric, very high level understanding of something. And so these four highly educated individuals walk into this mystical orchard, and one of them unfortunately dies. One loses their sanity. One decides to start hating God, and one comes in peace and leaves in peace. And so what you could construe from this story is that three of the individuals weren't ready for this level of understanding, that highest esoteric level of understanding. And if we relate this in the real world from this story, is that not everyone is ready for the highest level of understanding of something. So really, we can't assume that more information is always better. We can't assume that everyone is ready for a certain level of understanding. And I think even more importantly is that we can't assume that the same information is going to benefit everyone or affect everyone the same way.
I have to ask, again, comparing things to the common narratives in society today, there's this idea of traveling the world and just getting out there. And from my subjective view, when you're farming and the family's at the farm, that's where the jobs are done. Is there ever a part of you that thinks, oh, I wish I could travel outside. I wish I was in business that had me all over the world and doing a bunch of different things. That's what you see all over social media today. And it doesn't seem as if that's even important to this group I'm talking to.
I guess I myself have been fortunate over the years. Now, when we first started farming, of course, we didn't have the finances to basically go traveling. Like, you know, you started farming with a couple of $1,000s and up to your eyeballs in debt, and so you just didn't have the finances. And then as we gradually got our feet under us type thing and rolling, then we were sort of fortunate. We could do the odd you know trip for a couple of days. Not that we went very far. And I think it wasn't until we probably were farming, I think somewhere around 12, 15 years, that we started spreading a little further. We'd get out west once in a while. We got relatives and friends out western Canada. Then as time went on, we got into bigger trips. About 10, 12 years ago, we were to New Zealand and Australia. That was the biggest one of our life. That one was a 32-day thing. And that's when Jamie, he got straddled with the chores for that one.
I don't think any of us have an itch, like a real burning itch to get somewhere. Like if it's nice, if an opportunity presents itself, but it's not like that's our reason for being, is to travel.
Sorry to add my own two cents again. I'm sitting here so fired up as I re-listen to this episode because it is so apparent that, as you heard Brett say, this isn't a means to an end. They don't do what they do for any other reason than the purpose of doing it. So even if you look at the opportunity cost of the job, if it's actually fulfilling your deep-rooted needs, I hypothesize personally that those external socially fabricated needs that we think we have to have don't seem as important. They start to lose that power. They start to lose that sparkle, that glimmer.
And I would say where our time away from the farm started to decrease considerably is when we started the new build of the new barn. And then that has just kind of progressed into, the new barn, some more land opportunities, some more commodity opportunities. You know, what's funny, Ben, is with our organic system now, and how we take care of the animals and especially take care of the land. I think I'm not going to speak for you, Dad, but I think we're getting closer to farming back when you were a kid with your dad.
Yeah.
And I think that is just so cool, full circle, getting back to the basics. And instead of telling nature how to farm and what to do, let's work with it and listen to it. And we're all better off for it. And yeah, you know what? Farming can be hard. It can be really hard. It's very fulfilling. But I would be the first to tell you, Ben, I think it helps every farmer to get a day here and a day there away. And just like you say, recharge, take a breath and just refocus. I believe in that. Yeah.
But I think here on the farm here now in the last, I would say 3 to 5 years, there's been so much new stuff going on. It's just new challenges. It's been it's been a real learning experience. You know, even though I've farmed all my life, there's a lot of things I've, you know, learned in the last 3 to 5 years that you just didn't know. It didn't have to because of all the other tools that you could use. But now, you know, and I think that's just been the challenging part. And I know it's one of those things on the farm. You've always got challenges, but it just seems it's beating those challenges. That's what makes you tick.
So you can start to see why I asked this question about getting off the farm and expanding beyond the farm. And why I asked it was because of the meaning and purpose that exists there and the lack of outwardly looking for something else when they have everything they need right in front of them. And I wanted to quote Carl Jung, who I often quote on this podcast, and things are going to get quite philosophical here, but so powerful. And I wanted to tie this esoteric philosophical meaning to what we're hearing right now from this incredible family. So here's the quote: until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. And in my own paraphrase, what we're seeing here is you make the darkness light by bringing to the surface what you actually want, which comes at a cost. Sometimes it's painful. It comes at a cost of going against the expectations of those around you. There's no coming to consciousness without pain, Carl Jung would say. Continuing on, faith, hope, love, and insight are the highest achievements of human effort. They are found and given by experience. The only meaningful life is a life that strives for the individual realization, absolute and unconditional, of its own particular law. That means you, the individual, not anyone else's. To the extent that a man is untrue to the law of his being, he has failed to realize his own life's meaning. And I would even argue potential. Man cannot stand a meaningless life. The least of things with a meaning is worth more in life than the greatest of things without it. I'm going to say that one again, and then we're going to let this conversation flow. Man cannot stand a meaningless life. The least of things with a meaning is worth more in life than the greatest of things without it. But what is the farming lifestyle like? The risks, the rewards, the schedules, if you can paint a picture for people.
I'll go real quick. I'm going to give you a perfect example of where what energizes me every day and where I believe that I have found my calling or my purpose is I'm trying to rethink it outside of being a farmer. I want to be a food producer. When we started 3Gen Organics, the product that we had to offer to today's consumer was our organic pork, right? So you learn the business and you learn the consumers in today's community of what they value, what they want, the story they want to hear, their connection to the farm and the food. And so we built up, you know, success with the organic pork line. But we also then quickly learned that there's a lot of people in our communities that, number one, don't choose meat as their protein, or they're vegans and they don't eat meat at all. So what really made us really start to think big picture here, okay, we've got a lot of resources here on the farm that we know how to grow healthy, wholesome raw product. How do we open up our skills to more consumers? Okay. And our latest product that I love this story is we took our organic corn that we grow right here on the farm, and we now have our own line of organic corn tortilla chip. And what I love about that story, Ben, what's fulfilling for me is the chip is now available to our communities. But what we're working on now is the actual visual timeline of that product starting at seed. From the preparation of the soil to the seeding to the weed management to the harvest to cleaning it to the end product of the tortilla chip. And for me as a farmer, I look at that, well, I just produced food. And what a story. How many people can take a product that you help nurture from a seed all the way to a finished product that you can have, you know, Nacho Tuesday night at any home in our community, and we had a hand in that. And I find that, that's where I find my purpose now. I find the ability to tell the story behind our food. And it doesn't stop at our tortilla chip. We now have our organic bread flour with 1847 stone milling, and we're working on the same type of story behind it, where a family-owned business, Melissa, comes out with her kids, and they're walking the wheat fields that will be harvested, that they mill for yourself and your girlfriend to make bread with. Like, how cool is that? Like, that's where I get jacked up every day, and knowing that we've got this opportunity to make a difference. And what I'm really learning is, as we go through this journey, and it is a journey, we're learning more, but also people are learning more about us and what we do. And I'm trying to help farming get away from that stereotype of you wake up in the morning, you work all day, you go to bed at night. Nobody has any idea where their end product goes. You know, you produce pork, but you don't know who ends up eating it. You produce all this corn, you truck it off the farm, you have no idea where it all goes. Well, now we're losing connection. Now we're losing connection between, you know, our societies, our communities, and the farmer. And I think if we can work and make that full circle, we bring a lot more meaning to life. You didn't know I was this deep, eh? You just thought I was the guy that did push-ups, no shoes on, and just, oh, I told you I'd be jacked for this. I told you that.
Yeah, I think that one of the challenges that modern ag is facing with is the commoditization of what people are doing. So, you know, you're basically, if you're a conventional producer, and even a lot of organic producers that don't have a direct-to-market avenue as part of their business model, you're producing crops and raising livestock. And what you get paid is what the Chicago Board of Trade tells you it's worth. So it doesn't matter if it's a bushel of wheat produced in Ontario or Kansas or whatnot, you get paid what the market tells you it's worth. And it all gets lumped together. It's a totally homogenous marketplace. And one of the unique aspects that I think has changed the philosophy of how we view ourselves, you know, we're not producing volume, we're producing quality. And we're feeding people that we know. And we know their faces, we know their names, we know their stories. And that provides us with that, you know, reason of being to work harder to deliver the best for them. Where if you're just producing volume, you want to maximize volume, decrease your input cost if you can. And that's how your business model is structured in a commodity-based system. But when it's feeding people that have faces and names and stories and lives and dependents and goals for themselves, if we can be part of their story, that gives us a great deal of purpose, as you mentioned.
Yeah. Like, along the way, we've had our challenges. So, you know, if we can run it back, we started the transition of the land. Okay. And then we figured out of our close to 600 acres, we started with about 120-ish. And we quickly learned after year one that this is doable. And we will have success with this. So we started the transition of all of our acres over to the organic standards. And then the next piece of the puzzle is, okay, well, now you've got conventional hogs that you're going to end up growing a crop, because we grow basically everything that we grow here on the home farm feeds the animals. Well, now we're switching over to an organic commodity that we're not going to take that and feed it to a conventional hog. So that's what started the change of all the barns over to organic standards to meet, you know, square footage, outdoor access, straw bedding, which in the end, Ben, so much better for the animal. Like, it's funny, you know, I'll speak for me personally. I farmed hogs my whole life, but the last, you know, 2.5-3 years since being on the organic standards and the pigs have, you know, over 3 times the square footage. They go outside, straw bedding, organic diet, loose house. Nobody's in stalls. Everybody's got room to grow. And I've learned so much more about the animal. They've taught me, because instead of trying to tell them what to do, they're going to show me if they're healthy. They're going to show me if they're you know, happy or under stress or so on. So getting back to the full circle here is we got everything rolling. We got new structures up. We got the barn going, and the market that we had a contract to, it ended up not being as true as what we thought it was going to be. So here we've invested a lot of money.
At that point, the fundamental problem with our outlook was we changed our practices, but not our philosophy.
Correct.
And that's where you need to have a change in how you see things in order to change how you do things.
Yeah.
So we were raising animals and producing crops under a set of standards that were followed as though they were rules, but not part of our principles, part of our being. And when you manage your business that way, we were meeting a market, but we weren't actually doing it in the way that it should be done, which is building it organically, those grassroots connections.
Correct.
So if you're selling all what you produce to one market, you know, what difference is that than selling to the Chicago Board of Trade? It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And that was a good lesson in risk management. I think to get back to one of Ben's earlier questions though, around challenges, it's very important to acknowledge that when you do change the way that you are performing in agriculture, it's a community that has a lot of great support systems, but it's also can be quite judgmental at times and doesn't like change. So I think one of the things, you know, is a great deal of moral courage that's needed to do things differently and push the envelope, farm in a way that's in accordance with our values. And that comes at the disapproval and censure of a lot of our colleagues, mm-hmm. because they're at a place in their own journey where they don't understand what you're doing. They see change as something that threatens their well-being, yeah. as opposed to something that can enrich everyone's livelihoods. So I think that the being able to deal with the disapproval and censor of your colleagues is quite an important aspect in our journey so far. And to pick up where you left off before about pivoting and finding opportunities, we didn't just have to follow a set of rules. We had to change our view as farmers, what we were doing.
Because I think when we first started, when we were faced with the adversity of not the market that we thought we were going to have at the end, instead of marketing them organically, we had to market them conventionally. So you take a 50% hit right off the top because of the feed costs. That is honestly where 3Gen Organics was born. It was through adversity. We had no set market. We built this state-of-the-art barn for organic standards, and the market that was promised to us wasn't there. So the crossroad we had to come to was, okay, we're going to figure this out on our own, or we're going to have to, you know, convert the animals maybe to humane standards and change the standard of the animal to then find a market. But the three of us sat here at this very kitchen table. We were like, no. We believe in the organic standard. We believe in the organic standard for the land. We believe in the organic standard for the animal, for the future, for the consumer, for the environment. We believe in all this. We got to figure this out. And again, like I said before, Ben, three minds can get heated, and it got heated that day. I can remember it got hot because we're like, what the hell are we going to do? We're losing money every hog going out the door. What are we going to do? And then finally, we just said it. We're going to market ourselves. We're going to market ourselves. We've got a family farm, three generations working together, organic, the way of the future. Okay. And we're passionate and we've got a great story. We've just got to get it out there somehow and dig in and keep doing what we're doing, and we'll figure this out. And this is where we are today. We've gone from, you know, self-marketing pork to now, you know, we've got flour, we've got tortilla chips, and more products are coming.
Incredible. What has this journey taught you about execution? What has it taught you about leadership? From that dark day at the, well, not maybe not a dark day, but really the spark that was needed to change who you were going to be from a philosophical point of view, and now to where everything is with 3Gen.
I think it's one of those things that you just got to monitor any opportunity that comes along
and analyze it and just go with it. And when it comes to a lot of these different products, I give it to Brett and Jamie. They're the ones that they seem to excel more on that side. And I got to give them a lot of credit the way they follow up on things and get the business idea going. And they got make a lot of connections and talk to a lot of people. I tend to stick to the farming end. That's the one place where I excel and you know, I understand what the rules are and you work within the rules and try to drive the system from that side. So it's been a learning experience. And I think it's great. I don't think that, you know, a lot of these new ventures that you guys have, come across, I don't think you had planned any of them. You just all of a sudden get a lead. You make some calls and do some investigating and research and we can maybe make this work. And you take a shot at it. I think one of the things I probably said, this is, you know, quite a while before you guys even got into doing this, your other marketing stuff. I've said that what is changing in the marketplace is you've got to produce what the consumer wants. And you just can't be producing and hope to come out on it. You got to identify what it is the consumer wants, and you got to be be truthful, visible about it.
Transparent.
Transparency is the word.
And I think in terms of leadership, Ben, what it all comes down to is being the type of leader that you would want to follow yourself. So as opposed to being deterred by obstacles, trying to frame that in a way where it's an opportunity for improvement. It's the same way we've managed through this COVID crisis. You know, we had a business model that was working and doing quite well into 2019 and the start of 2020. And of course, then when you have pandemic affecting the stability of processing plants, a lot of our restaurants and other small businesses that we're working with on a direct marketing end, they're significantly impacted by it. But as opposed to having that define us as, well, there goes that idea. You know, how can we pivot? How can we adapt? How can we take what we have now and improve ourselves through this adversity as opposed to letting it define us and defeat us? And that's something that Carl certainly is had to do over the years. And I think pivot and adapt is one of those examples. You know, 22% interest and above that in the 1980s, it changed the way that he managed his business. And as opposed to, you know, letting that define his career, it's a portion of it, but it wasn't your career.
Mm-hmm.
It was a segment as opposed to in its entirety. So the COVID opportunity, as I'll say it, allowed us to connect on an individual level. It's funny, in an era of disconnect, I think that we are more connected now than ever before with the people that we're able to feed.
Mm-hmm.
And I will take a bit of exception with, and I know it's because it's nomenclature. It's the common words used to describe people. You know, I don't think there's anyone that's a consumer. I think it's a different stakeholder in the process. It's our community members.
Yeah.
And that's something that the younger generation, myself included, that's how we frame the conversation. I think it's gradually changing. You know, that our words are important. Words matter. As we change the way we see the world, we change the way that we speak about those we interact with. So leadership's been really important. And we learned a lot from Carl. There's one thing that he's always said, Grandpa always said, you know, we can do anything, even the impossible. It just takes a little longer. And Carl lives up to that on a frequent basis. I mean, he can be stubborn and he's going to do it himself because that's what he had to do. So as opposed to saying, well, it's gone, let's just, you know, fold like a cheap lawn chair. How can we make an opportunity out of a potential tragedy?
Yeah.
And learn from it. And it's been great. I mean, I honestly can say back in the, that day that we heard the news about the potential market disruption with respect to the processing plant we were working with when they wanted to cut the overnight rate, it's quite scary.
Yeah.
We're better now.
Yes.
Because of it.
Yeah.
It was a good thing that happened to us.
It was, you bet.
And that goes back to that predator mindset.
Yep.
okay, as opposed to being the victim in it, how are we the predator? How do we go on the offensive? How do we take that and say, you know what? We are going to become stronger because of what you put us through.
Yeah, totally.
Now,
yeah.
I don't want it to happen again, but...
No, but what that adversity taught us to do was to... It taught us to think outside the box.
Yeah.
It taught us to become more more connected with our community. And
say, why not? Why not?
And why not?
Why not us?
Because what we learned through the whole thing is you can get promised a lot. A contract's a contract, but it can also be taken away from you just as quick. If you're going to rely on anybody, make sure you're relying on your team that you're sitting beside. You know, and that's what we quickly realized here was, okay, the three of us with our experience and our different skill sets, we've got a vision. We've been hit with some adversity. We've got a challenge. How are we going to overcome it and come out better for it in the end? At the same time, help others learn from it and give them the confidence and the courage to try what we've tried. And I think we're on that platform now, Ben, because we took all our own risks. And we didn't follow the path that was most traveled by the other organic producers. And we went out on our own. We went solo. We went for over a year with no market for any of our animals. None. So that means no guaranteed income with a large, you know, building debt on our shoulders. But we believed in what we did and we believed in each other. And we figured it out. And I think, you know, you ask what you learned from it. What I learned from it is adversity doesn't fear me a whole lot anymore, because I feel like those 2 years that we went through it, you know, like, Dad, you talk about the 22% that you went through, and I can't relate to that. But I think what we went through for, you know, was over 2 years of zero market stability, yet a high debt load. That is something I've never experienced, but sitting here now today, confident and bullish in what we're doing, not only as a business, Ben, but for environmental health. Like, I'm learning more every day about what our true meaning and purpose is to be organic farmers and, you know, how are we making positive change to the environment, to human health, to our soil, to our animals and everything. I have made all of those transitions in my own personal health, as far as I'm organic diet and clean. I still indulge. I still like my snacks, my chocolate or my chips, but my personal health has never been as good as it is today. Ultimately, my goal is, Ben, if we can help other farmers to see how our methods are very positive towards the environment, towards our communities, towards our soil, it'll give them the courage to do the same. And the more farmers we can get to start transitioning land and switching over to the organic standards, it's going to benefit us all in the long run.
Yeah, but I don't think it's just so much even the standards. It's, again, it has to be much more of a philosophical change. If you're just going to follow the rules, and when you run into challenges in an organic production system where you can't use any synthetic fertilizers, no herbicides, no insecticides, no fungicides, anything with the word kill or definite basically is prohibited.
Yeah.
So, you know, when that happens, you can either view pests, weeds, disease as a challenge that needs to be conquered, or is it trying to tell me something about my system that's not working right?
Yeah.
So when we see certain weed species, we now have the outlook, okay, that is telling us that we have an imbalance in our system. And that philosophy in terms of, you know, even business management, okay, marketing challenges, what's that telling me? What are we overlooking? What are we not doing to the best of our ability? And I think if you can view obstacles as that, you know, growth mindset, learning opportunities, it's the same whether it be, you know, raising pigs, growing crops, or managing a business, looking at things in a different mindset, It's been really impactful to us.
Yeah.
It's powerful hearing you guys speak this way and continue. Like, I can just sit here and listen all day. And the two biggest things I just noticed is, one, it reminds me of a quote that Elon Musk had that said, if a problem is important enough, like genuinely important enough to you and your philosophy and your beliefs, you do it even though the risks are high and the odds are not in your favor, which I think is fascinating, because there's something inside you that's giving you that self-efficacy in the state of adversity and anxiety, potentially depression in those dark times, I'm sure. But what I'm noticing, and geez, it comes up in so many stories, is when you are that connected, willfully connected to what you do, you notice more things. So now you start to notice opportunities that you didn't notice before because you weren't as connected to your job, or connected, like you just said, Brett, which is so powerful for any business, is that it's not the customer, it's a stakeholder. Yeah. And someone in the process of the, you know, the end product. That is fascinating. It's such a strong connection to what you're doing, which, of course, not to get into the Marxist beliefs, but it's this lack of connection to jobs, to work, to life, environment, people, yourself, right? And so, geez, it's just coming out more and more that when you found now this connection to what you do, there's nothing but opportunities, even in those dark times. And I kind of wanted to dive into that, because I look at you three and see this resilient, smart, strong group. But what was it in those times where, hey, this market looks terrible, I don't see, you know, outwardly or right in front of me, rationally speaking, much opportunity? What was it that gave you hope that you could get through it, that you would find a way out?
I think strength in each other. You know, if it was just any one of us individually, it probably wouldn't have gone well, but you had to depend on each. And we're all subject to having days where one of us of the three is probably more pessimistic than the other one. But it takes the strength in team and family. That's what the point of family is. That's why we're pack animals, right? We have an ability to compensate for the deficiencies of others when someone else is sick in the family. Right. So, that's my understanding of it. If someone in the group is struggling or not doing well, or their outlook is not as optimistic as the rest of us, we don't feel our own pain in order to help the others get through it. Yeah. And I think it took all three in order to make that happen. If it was just,
I think that's, you're right on the money there. When that real travesty was going, and there was, about 20 of us that were shipping into that?
20 different producers.
But a lot of them were like single ownerships. It's like just that one person. And so it was just, you know, that whole drama was on that one person. We're one group, but there was three of us. And between the three of us, one was having a better day and lift the other two guys up, and you'd bounce the ideas off of one another. It's just amazing the ideas that came out because of that. And so we were fortunate in that. So there in that situation, there was a lot of those single operations. They opted to get out of it. There's a lot of them just.
And some lost their family farm.
Some did, yeah.
Some lost their family farm. And I'm not like, you know, you talk about the adversity, Ben. For me, on a personal basis, I felt a lot of guilt when we faced that adversity, because here, Dad and Mom had built this, and still very successful, don't get me wrong, but built a very successful family farm, carried no debt. Nothing.
It was a riskless environment, basically. It was just steady Eddie. Yeah.
He was sitting on doing great. And here we come back and we're like, hey, you know what? Let's transition the land. Let's go organic. Let's put up a multi-million-dollar barn and let's rock it. You know, we get 5 weeks into shipping, we lose our market, and we're sitting on debt with no market for animals. And I went through a long period of time of feeling extreme guilt, because here, it was kind of our idea, and we took away a lot of like real assurance, real something that was, you know, it was set. It was good. It was just leave it be. It was fine. But our vision really put a lot of things upside down, and then top it off with the market that we thought we had. It wasn't there, but it wasn't just for us. It was a lot of other farmers. But then what Brett and Dad said, pack mentality. But then also for me, it's a belief, because I'll always go back to self-experience and what I learned as a child from mom and dad, and then my own personal experience growing up, you know, through my playing days of junior hockey, right? And then some adversity after that. Mom and dad always taught me, dig it and do it. You'll figure it out. Just do it. You know,
they should have had that trademark before Nike took.
Yeah, it was nothing for
we wouldn't have any dead issues now if
Kyle, for example, Ben, as a child, seating, for example, it's a time limited for event that's got to get done at a certain time. As a child, it was common for me to see dad go 48 hours, not stop. Why? Had to get done, got to do it. Not throw in the towel and say, whatever, you got to do it. You know, I reverted back to my hockey days. There were so many times through my junior time, playing junior A, junior B, so many people told me that I couldn't do it, wouldn't make a team. You know, you're not good enough. You're not skilled enough. Screw you. Yeah, I am. And I'm going to show you. So you take those adversities, you take those life lessons, and we got hit with this on the family farm. And the most logical thing, and a lot of other farmers took it, was to opt out of organic and switch. But that wasn't in our DNA. That wasn't in our belief, because we believed in each other and we believed what we were doing. And there's that inner belief that you're going to figure it out, because that's been taught to you through your past. You'll figure it out. It won't be easy. And it wasn't. But there's not a day goes past now that I'm really actually grateful for the adversity that we face. Financially not, but hey, what the heck? There we go. But that taught us so many things, and it's grown us. It's grown Carl Israel Farms and 3Gen to where it is today, and where it's going to be for the future. Like, where we are today is not where we're going to be, 2022. It's not going to be where we're going to be 2025.
I want to conclude on the topic of work ethic, because you the three of you so easily talk about the physical labor that goes into this, but then also knowing the complexities of the business side. You guys do such a good job of just carrying the conversation. If I said, what is work ethic to you three, what comes to mind?
I'll speak watching you. Your work ethic is very fulfilled driven. And you've always taught me, if you wake up every day and you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. So when I watch dad, still work 18 hour days at 79, which, people think is nuts. Like, what the hell are you doing, Carl? You're 79 years old. You've got a son, you got a grandson, and you still, you still plug away from 6 in the morning till 8, 9 at night, in season a lot more. Like, what are you doing? But for when I watch dad, it's very fulfilling. For the three of us, I would say, work ethic, especially physical labor and just getting the grunt stuff done, I would say that's probably my strong suit. But having said that, and I'll give you some credit to it, Ben, is listening to your podcasts and learning more about, purposeful work.
Yeah.
Do it, work with a purpose and work with a fulfillment. And I think where what 3Gen has really taught us is we know longer as farmers, or I'm trying to get away from that, as food producers, can just put in a 16-18 hour day and our end product is gone. Those days don't exist here for for 3Gen. And so when I explain that is when we self-market all of our organic pork, well, we're responsible for selling, you know, all of the bacon, all of the hams, all of the ribs, every part we need to move it. Cause if we don't, we build up inventory. You build up inventory, you're sitting on revenue. You sit on revenue too long, well, you're not making the full sale. So what that's really taught us is how to dig in, work, but purposeful work, and how to connect. So we move all of the pieces. No different than our, you know, the latest products, our flour and our tortilla chips. Well, the phone's not ringing of people calling us as of yet, right? We need to go dig in, and how do we figure that out? And, you know, yeah, you'll get some calls that you make looking for some interest, and it's a flat out no. But if you take that as a hit on the chin and you stop, well, then, you know, you're not fulfilling what it is you truly want to accomplish. And I think what I've really learned through this process is being a food producer, I'm going to use that term, being a food producer takes a lot of work. Okay. And that's fine. That's okay. Where I feel it's all beneficial in the end is work every day with a purpose, with a goal. And if you do that, you're going to feel the fulfillment. And I think for me, on a personal basis, I try to go away a little bit from what the traditional farmer feels. Hard work is about, you know, making a good living and making money. And that's true. That's okay. That's good. But I said it to Dad and Brett, you know, through this past year, through 2020, a lot of adversity. We had, you know, Carl Israel Farms and 3Gen, we had success. But through our hard work, our business success was not the most fulfilling aspect that I had as a food producer. My most fulfilling aspect that we had was through our connections in the farming world. We have friends that are large cash croppers who are now in the middle of starting to transition land to organic standards. That's fulfillment. Through us doing what we do, through us, yeah, working hard, but working with a purpose and working with that end goal of fulfillment, our influence and our experience is now helping a large conventional family farm starting to transition some of their land to organic. So if we can make that influence through our hard work, that's my fulfillment. You know, my fulfillment is through our hard work, our community that talks to us on a daily, weekly basis about our products, you know, getting that text, getting that pick of the meal that they made with our hard work, that's fulfillment. So, you know, there's so many ways of looking at it different. But I've always been someone who enjoys physical labor and, you know, the workouts and everything else like that. That's never been something that I shy away from. But I'm starting, you're going to laugh at this one. I'm starting to try to use my mind a little bit more instead of just my body. And I think through that, with the help of Brett, Luke, and Dad, you'll learn a lot more about yourself and what your true fulfillment is.
It sounds very much like embodying that greater purpose in every task that you're doing, right? It is tough going out and seeding by hand or whatever it may be with that task that day, but embodying that greater vision, that greater goal in that task you're doing can be so powerful, but it comes at the cost of taking the time to find that connection to what you're doing. And I don't know if everyone's taking the time to take that breather and find that connection. This has been absolutely outstanding. I don't know if there's anything else you three would like to add to conclude here and take us over the finish line.
I don't think so. I think it's
It's been a great pleasure to start the conversation today, Ben, and hopefully it's something that we can continue. Certainly with the COVID restrictions, it's making it more challenging to be in person. But for any of your listeners that would like to follow up and get on a call with us, we want to make agriculture as transparent as possible. It's essential to our well-being. It's a great part of our shared history. And I think that if we can be a role model for opportunities of connecting various stakeholders in the food process, we'd certainly like to be a catalyst for that. So please spread the message and feel free to reach out to anyone who's listening today. And we'd love to get the conversation going there too.
We appreciate this opportunity. We do. We're an open book. We you know, going off of what Brett said, yeah, spread the word. We want to share our story. We want to share what we're doing and keep building for the future.
That brings us to the end of another Heroic Minds podcast. Of course, if you want to check out 3Gen Organics, the link is in the description of the episode. And if you want to keep this conversation going, I encourage you to send me an email, check out the Heroic Minds website, and we can keep the conversation going. I'm Ben Finelli. This is the Heroic Minds podcast. We'll talk again soon.